Welcome to the Good Dad, Bad Dad podcast. I'm one of your hosts, Armand Sheffy, and my other host, as always, is here with me, Eric Schaefer. And we're two very different fathers, finding common ground in parenting special needs kids, sports, nerd culture, and who knows what else. But one thing that we do know, that any day you could be the good dad or the bad dad. We hope you enjoy. Eric, as we're going to be talking a lot about parenting and, you know, what life is like with our kids, what was it like in your household growing up? And maybe tell us a little bit about your parents and family situation.
Like, childhood was normal for me.
What does normal look like for you? Because, like, there's so many different layers to what normal is depending on how you grew up. Because everyone kind of looks at their story as a bit of the standard. But, you know, there's differences. So what was it like for you? Did you grew up, what was it, Skokie?
Des Plaines.
Des Plaines. Okay, so tell us about what normal looked like for you.
We were just a typical family, you know, family of five. I have two sisters, my parents. We all played sports.
What sports were you into?
I was into everything, man. Everything except for football. And at an earlier age, it wasn't really hockey, so it was mostly basketball, baseball. Because, you know,
wait, you played basketball? I don't know why I can't see you playing basketball.
I played basketball until my sophomore year of high school.
Wow, what position?
I had the height, four, power forward. Even though I was a string bean, they still
also
put me at number
thing
four.
I can't see.
Not anymore, man. Not anymore. But yeah, I mean, it was, you know, during the summer, it was all baseball. And then towards the fall, it was basketball. And my dad was pretty much my coach from T-ball through middle school. And then once you get involved with the high school sports, you kind of, you know, fade away from dad being, you know, your coach into real coaches that hold you accountable. So and then during, you know, during the school year, it was Boy Scouts, Cub Scouts, it was Indian Guides at a younger age. Both of my sisters were involved, and we all went to the same schools, and pretty much as adults gone our separate ways, as, you know, where we live now, but all still here in Illinois.
Gotcha. Now, growing up, you said you had two sisters?
Two sisters.
So what was the dynamic like there? So first of all, were you the oldest, middle child, youngest child?
So I'm the oldest. Then I have another sister, Kirsten. She's 2 years younger than me. And then another sister, Megan, which is four. So there's 2 years in between all of us. So, I mean, yeah, it was typical brother-sister relationship. You know, we never really got along. And at times we would get along and things were being thrown and things were being destroyed and doors were being slammed. And so, yeah, it was nothing too bad, nothing too great.
So would you say if there's this spectrum between like being the bully and being the protector, or is there a combination? What was your role within your siblings?
I think at the earlier ages, it was the bully, right? Because you're the big brother and the sisters are smaller than you. But then once you start getting into like middle school and high school, you kind of become the protector that you don't want.
Yeah.
You know, your sisters being left unprotected.
Right, right. And is it one of those, and I've experienced this too, where it's like, I can pick on them, but you can't, you know?
Oh, I still pick on them today.
Right, right.
Not so much the bullying, but the picking on them.
Sure.
That's a badge of honor for a brother.
Totally, totally. So what about your relationship with your parents? Did you guys get along? Were they like overprotective or overbearing, or were they kind of like, hey, you just do you, or what?
I mean, from early ages, my dad worked overnights. So he was, you know, gone at night, slept during the day. And my mom, I think sixth grade is when she started working just because, you know, we needed the extra money, but, it was kind of, you do you, you know, I mean, I see kids today walking to the bus stop with their parents and their parents waiting with them until you get onto the bus. That didn't happen when I was a kid. We walked to the bus ourselves at like since first grade. Got on and got off the bus without any, parent oversight. So, that's, the world we lived in back then, and it's definitely not what it is today. So.
Well, from an early age then, you were already there was already this expectation that you were a bit more responsible for you and for what you needed to do, you know what I mean? As opposed to like mom and dad handling more and more for you. You know, 'cause that is a trend that I've seen, here, especially even in my own home where I'm like, "No, they need to learn some responsibility, you know?"
Yeah, I think, I guess Diana and I, that's my wife, Diana, I guess we could be considered hover parents or helicopter parents, that you're always, hovering over the situation to make sure that it doesn't get out of control. That definitely didn't happen when I was a kid. And especially as we grew up in life, my parents divorced after my freshman year of high school, and there really wasn't any oversight. My mom was worrying about raising my two sisters. So, I had to kind of take care of myself from that point, which, I mean, if you're 15, 16 years old, there's no reason why you can't get your clothes ready and make lunch and get out to school on time. So nowadays, kids probably have like 8 alarm clocks, set their iPhone or their Android just to get out of bed.
Surprisingly, my daughter Layla, who's just turned 16 now, she's actually great at it. She's horrible morning person, not at all a morning person, but like something in her clicked regarding school that like, yeah, I need to get up and be about my business, and she sets her own alarm and she gets up. Let me ask you, what do you think is the reason why you and Diana have decided to have a bit of a different approach than your parents had? Do you think it's more related to kind of just who you see your kids as and what you think they need, or just something that is in you guys that wasn't in your parents, or what do you think?
I think it's a couple of things. I think, the main thing is I'm a fire stopper. I want to put out a fire before it starts. So I've been where both of my kids have been in age, right? So I kind of know where things are going. Like if you shouldn't be playing with something, as a parent, you're always trying to guide your kid into the right way, but it doesn't always work. So yeah, I know it's kind of hard because there's the snowplow parents that have to clear everything out of the way for the kids and the helicopter parents. And I think there's a couple of other ones, but I don't think we're there yet. But, eventually the kids are going to have to start doing things on their own, right? And they start figuring out mom and dad aren't always going to be there for you.
So you grew up in the Plains, what you would call that a pretty normal childhood. When did you start feeling like you had an idea about what you might want to do in life, or career-wise, or some sort of direction?
No clue, dude. No clue. No clue. I
Are you
wanted
saying
to
like
play.
still like you don't?
Still don't know what I want to do. No, I mean, when I was five, that's when I started playing baseball. And I think it's every kid's dream, at that age, I want to go play baseball. I want to get paid. And you put in all the work. And then, once you kind of get to high school, you kind of see like baseball's really not going to be going anywhere. So, I did the whole, community college thing for a year. And I broke my wrist pretty bad. And it was my right wrist. So I was kind of casted where I couldn't use my fingers because it was going to start affecting everything in here. And they wanted everything to set right. So I asked all of the professors that I was in, can I tape, the sessions and try to write with my left hand at home? And I guess it was a different time because they all said no. And I wasn't really confident writing with my left hand. So I gave up on college and just started in the retail life. And unfortunately,
Never knew that.
the re the retail life was the pits, man, you know, hours all over the place and the pay not really good and fighting with other people to get the hours that you wanted. And, you know, I hooked up with, he's still a good friend of mine to today. I hooked up with him working a job, and we were working in the mall, and I was there for 7 years, and it was fun because it wasn't always just work. It was, you know, life. It was sports. It was, you know, work was just like a fraction of it. And then had a couple of other painful retail jobs. And then the opportunity came to where I'm at now. And I'm going on. I just started my 12th year with the company, and I love it. Like the travel, the opening and closing of our locations, the moving of them. So it's been great.
Nice, man. Nice. And I think, you know, I think with that, maybe I'll jump in. Cause, if I recall, it was months after you started, just a handful of months after you started, there that I joined the same company. And that for me was a very pivotal time, because like I'll jump back, and with my story, I actually,
yeah. Where did you grow up?
Yeah,
I know, so you said south suburbs, right?
Yeah, yeah. So a little Dutch village called South Holland,
and yeah, I've heard of it.
Yeah, yeah, and it's made a significant transformation since when I was there. When I moved in there, it was what, 1986, and like we were the first black family to show up in this little old Dutch village, you know. And now I think I can't find a white family there, you know, like it's all become, you know, a black town now. But the journey there was awkward, because, you know, I mean, it's the mid-80s.
Did you feel the eyes on you?
Oh my goodness. Yeah, bro. Like it was.
So moving in, you kind of took a look around, and yeah, one of these things aren't like the others, and
right,
it just kind of left.
Absolutely. And it wasn't a great experience. I'll just be honest. It was a lot of me trying to find ways to fit in, and most of the time not really successfully. And then I would find that slowly more and more black families would come in, and it was, I mean, when I say slowly, over like the next maybe 3 or 4 years, I was seeing 1, 2, now 3 or 4, you know, different black students coming into the classroom. But a thing that was happening then was, so now I'm like, oh well, maybe I will connect with these students. But a weird thing that was happening was that they were coming in with a deep connection with their black culture. And I was like really focusing so hard to assimilate to the white culture. And then they're looking at me as like, well, you're not really like us. Like you're more like, so then I'm like, wait a minute, dude, this isn't cool. Like, so I don't fit with them and I don't fit with you. Cool, great. So I think that like that general reality was like an important marker for most of my journey of feeling like an outcast of sorts and not really feeling like I fit in. So most of my story from that point on was me wearing the hat that I thought I needed to wear in whatever conversation I was in order to try to fit in. And a lot of that looking for affirmation and approval was related to those, you know, peer relationships, as well as kind of the slowly severed relationship that I had with my dad, because like maybe a year after we moved to the south suburbs, and we moved from Michigan and then from Chicago. We were in Chicago for maybe like 8 months. But shortly after we moved to the south suburbs, my mom and my dad split, and then I'm like barely seeing him. He tried, you know, once a weekend type of thing, and then it would just become less and less and less. And you know, the dumb thing that kids do, they somehow find a way to make it like their fault, or like the dad's leaving me, and you know, all of that stuff was being internalized in addition to not feeling like I fit in amongst my peers. So like my whole thing was just like, I just gotta make sure that everyone engaging with me is like totally happy about their whole experience with me. So what did I need to do for that? So like I was the funny guy in this situation. I was like the helpful guy in that situation. And those are still things that kind of mark me to today. And another important part of my story, and then I'll kind of fast forward, is the journey that my family had going to church. My mom would take us to church every Sunday. We didn't really like it. My mom would have to bribe us. There was a Toy Story or a Toys R Us that we would pass going to the church. It was a church on the south side of Chicago. So we would drive like 45 minutes, but we would pass this Toys R Us. So we would like be like begging, and like probably every other time she'd be like, okay, if you guys are good, then we'll come here and we'll get some G.I. Joes. And
nice.
That was
nice.
Like the beginning of my embracing of like that comic booky nerd culture, whatever. It's like my favorites were Storm Shadow and Snake Eyes. And I still remember, you know, playing with them and burying them in the sand once at the Indiana Dunes and freaking never finding them again. Losing them in the sand at the Indiana Dunes. You know, really, really traumatic moment. But anyways.
I used to take mine because I was so enthralled with Empire Strikes Back and Hoth, the snow planet. I used to take my Star Wars figures and put them in a cup of water and then put them into the freezer and let them freeze.
Nice. Like reimagining that whole like ice planet scenario.
Yeah. And then eventually you forget them that they're in there. For the figure, and you can't find him, and your dad's screaming at you that he spends all this money on these figures, and you're just losing them. I'm not going to say screaming, but just, you know, giving me the business that I don't know how to take care of my things. Sure. So back to the South Side. I know you had your parents had split, but you had two brothers.
Yeah, yeah. Older brother and a younger brother. My older brother Khalil, my younger brother Raphael. Older brother 2 years older, younger brother 5 years younger. So there was a closeness with my older brother and I. Rivalry, however, very much so, because we were very different individuals. I was trying to be the good kid. So the way that I even internalized some of that stuff that I was just describing was that when it came to my parents, like I wanted more than anything for my parents to be proud of me. So I was like really focused on trying to be the best, you know, a child in the home, you know. And my older brother was a rebel. Like he embraced a lot of my dad, and like when they split, he was like, screw you, mom, and you know, like all of this whole business, but still living with mom, you know. So I was trying to be the good. My younger brother didn't really know my dad very well, you know. When they broke up, my younger brother was like 3. So he had a fractured relationship for most of that story. So I tried to hold everything together the best I could. And then I was like, when I graduated, I was like, I got to get out of here. I didn't really care where, but I knew I was going away to school.
And you have to forge your own path, right?
Yeah. Yeah. And I kind of like didn't really look back, and I do feel, like regret a bit about the way that I engaged with my family after going away to school. And only because my little brother was really struggling. And I mean, to be honest, all of us struggled to different degrees. But my little brother definitely was struggling. And so much so that, struggled with depression and, you know, medication involved with that. And, ultimately ended up having a stroke and passing away. I mean, 5 years ago. And that was really rough, you know. That was difficult. That's a marker in my life, you know. But I don't want to get too deep into that right now. We'll save that for another episode.
down the road.
Yeah. So we'll fast forward now. And so we meet right in 2010, was it?
Summer of 2010.
Yeah, yeah. And I think I won't say the rest is history, but maybe we'll get into more of that story in other episodes. We can't give them all the gold in episode one, you know? So,
gotta withhold it to keep them coming back.
Yeah, yeah. So come back for another episode and you'll hear more of the tales of Armand and Eric. But let's talk a little bit about, you know, some of the nerd culture stuff. I know we both kind of touched a little bit on that. Right now, we are in the midst of an amazing Disney Plus phenomenon called The Falcon and Winter Soldier. So, how are you feeling about it? And by the way, spoiler alert. Okay, so for anybody right now who hasn't watched it or isn't up to, what is it, episode four now? Four? Yeah, you might want to pause and just like...
Nuggets are going to be dropped.
Yeah, yeah. Bookmark this and come back. So what's your take so far, Eric?
I loved WandaVision.
Yeah.
I like this series a little bit more than WandaVision. I think it had the spy caper that kind of calls back to Captain America Winter Soldier. It looks like we're going to have three or four different types of villains, right?
Yeah, yeah.
It looks like our heroes are lost and confused right now, which is another element to the series. But overall, I love it. I love the last episode, the Wakandans got involved, and I wish they would have given us a little bit more of what we saw. I think the backstory of how Bucky was able to kind of reassimilate to not being the Winter Soldier was great.
Yeah, the deprogramming, yeah.
You know, and how he didn't even trust it, you know, because you could see in his eyes, he knew he was coming back to be the Winter Soldier. Mm-hmm. But I wish they would give us more. And I know when we shared on text messages, if Disney and Marvel don't come out with a story about Wakanda for Disney Plus,
yeah,
heads have to roll.
I don't know. Okay, well, I don't know if I would be like pressing the nuclear button right there.
I would hit that button. I would hit that button.
I would say it's definitely a missed opportunity because I watched it this last episode on my own, and you know I actually did my recording for plug Free to Play Entertainment, my YouTube channel. Go check it out on YouTube. Then I watched it again with Larissa, my wife, last night, and she was actually not caught up. So she finished episode three and she actually called that it was going to be the Wakandans, but she didn't remember what those little balls were, a lot like me. But then she's like, it's Wakanda. So I was like, I was impressed. But
then to see her,
yeah, yeah. But then to see her face light up when they showed, like, at the beginning of episode four, like, Wakanda, she was like, yeah! You know, like, that emotion, I think, is true for many people as they're watching this series when it comes to Wakanda. It was such, like, the whole Black Panther phenomenon was such a, I don't know.
Just put it this way, it was a game changer.
Yeah, game changer. That's the phrase. Yeah, totally a game changer. So, like, to then not capitalize on that in a significant way, especially as you're finding a ton of success even early on with these Marvel Disney Plus shows, like, that would definitely be a missed opportunity, you know? I like you, going back to the bit you said about the villains, I love that there's less of a... very clear, you are the villain type of scenario. Like, I just started seeing this when they started giving us the backstory of, like, Thanos, and kind of we see Killmonger's story. And even looking back at Loki, like, I love the best villains are the villains that are gray, where there's, like, you can empathize with them and a bit of their story. Like, you want to hate Loki so bad, but then you're like, oh, this kid was, like, an adopted alien. You know, he's like, he was struggling with his identity there. And then you can, same thing with Thanos. He's like, he's coming from this place of just his planet got decimated by, you know, overpopulation. And, you know, and then with Killmonger, he was, like, abandoned and, like, you know, he was just a kid wanting to you know, be with his dad. And now you've got, like, Carly, right? Carly is like, I am a displaced person now and trying to take it. Like, those that line, she said, you don't get it. We're fighting for our lives here. You know what I mean? And it's just like the jacked up ways that they all have about going about trying to get whatever they see as the right end, you know?
Yeah, one of the things that I've enjoyed so far is how they've touched on the blip in this series, where in WandaVision, you know, it really wasn't mentioned. It was mentioned here and there, but you can start to see that overpopulation now in those 5 years that they were all gone is now coming a problem. And it kind of strikes me funny that, you know, both Sam and Bucky were blipped away, right, in Infinity War.
Yeah. But yeah,
they don't share that problem that everybody else does. But Sam's kind of sharing it with his sister because
right.
The family business has obviously changed, and being able to provide for her two kids doesn't look like that's happening. But yeah, I've enjoyed it. I think we're going to have a lot of twists and turns in the last two episodes. And I think villain is going to be somebody that we're not expecting.
So can we talk about Power Broker for a minute?
So hold up. Before we get to there, right?
Okay.
Let me ask you a question.
Yeah.
Sharon Carter.
Yeah.
We have both exchanged texts that we potentially think she is the power broker, right?
Yeah.
If you've been exiled from the United States, how do you still have access to satellites?
Right. Like I'm saying, like she's got way too. So from the moment after you see the fight scene breaking off in that cargo area, wherever they're, I guess they're in a shipyard or something like that. And she gets into that car and like this chick is opening up the door for her. She's in the back seat, and it's like, and she says something like, we've got. There's a problem. Well, actually, there's
we've got
a
more problems.
Yeah. And it's like, there's a whole nother layer of, you know, story and connection that she's got there. And then, yeah, like you said, have access to these satellites. And like, who are you if you're not the power broker? Like, there's something significant there. But then in her conversation that she had, I don't know if it was with Sam, in this last episode, she says something to the effect of like making it sound like the power broker was somebody else. You know, it's like, oh yeah, I don't think the power broker is going to like this, or I don't know what it was. I'm sitting here like, so are they just trying to point us somewhere else right now? Or is this?
Well, here's a nugget I read this morning.
Okay.
That Marvel has confirmed they're introducing a new character this coming episode. So, they haven't confirmed who, and it hasn't been a character that has been any in the other MCU movies.
Also, like new. Like, we have yet to see this character, not just new to this series.
Right.
Oh, man. That.
Which is going to throw
maybe she isn't the power broker then. Maybe she's just.
I don't know.
Tied connected.
It's a good question.
Oh, that's
you know, and during WandaVision, we were all trying to figure out who the villain was from episode one. And I fell down the internet rabbit hole reading everything. And with this series, I really haven't read that much. I've ignored it. I wanna try to put my own thoughts of what is going on, but I like how Zemo got away. I think that's going to lead to another story of the Wakandans chasing him.
Yeah.
I thought what they did with John Walker was, you know, kind of tied to the comics that he was, you know, not a very good Captain America.
Yeah, I think that's saying it really nicely. Like, he basically, like, pissed on the shield. Like, you know, like, he took everything. And what's so difficult for me about John Walker is like everything you see when he's suited up and in fight mode, I cannot stand. And I'm like, just go away.
It feels forced.
Yeah, but then when you see him in these down moments, these conversations with Hoskins or whoever that gal was from the first time that we're really seeing a bit about his story, like you see him struggling and you see more of his humanity where he's like, I don't know if I have what it takes, or I don't know if I can deal with these expectations, or I don't know if, you know, power, having more power is right. And, you know, all this stuff that you in no way see him having that conflict when he's got the suit on and all that business.
There's a part of me that thinks that Lamar was his even keel, right? Like, if he was going to jump off the deep end, Lamar would come and say, no. Right. You know, you saw a little bit of it the last episode where Lamar was trying to tell him, give Sam the chance to go and talk. Right. So I think Lamar, not being there anymore, he's not going to have that, you know, that angel and that devil sitting on your side.
Now it's just him and the devil.
Him and the devil. And now you're not going to, you know, they both said that it alters your genes, right?
Yeah.
The super soldier serum. So now you're going to see maybe a John Walker, a U.S. agent, really go off the deep end and start, you know, taking names and kicking ass.
Yeah, well, that last image of the episode was quite a... stark contrast from his initial introduction.
Here's another question for you. When Steve left, right, the shield was broken and then he gave him a new one, right? Where are they getting all these shields from?
The shield factory. Come on, man. Maybe they went to go see, you know, SHIELD, and they're like, hey, agents of SHIELD, can you make me a shield? Cool. Have you gotten Kyle a sword yet? There, would you like to see our friends over here at Sword? They can hook you up with a sword.
My son Kyle asked, where are they getting all these shields? Because they tell you early on that Howard Stark was the one that made
it.
With a small amount of vibranium.
Which made it like such a unique, you know, one of a kind type of creation. Yeah.
Right.
So and I don't understand. And honestly, I don't understand, like, why the heavy emphasis on the shield. Like,
that's the symbol.
I mean, I get it from a symbolic nature, totally. But they keep talking about it like it's such a game-changing thing, and it's like, I don't know. I feel like they're making much to do about nothing. Like, and I shouldn't say it like nothing, like, but it's a shield. You know what I mean? Like, so I feel like Cap.
It was all something they got behind, right? Like, that's you all got behind it, and so I.
And so, but what happens now? What happens now that the shield, your symbol, right, is like covered in blood, and like not righteous blood. That was an execution for the world to see, and now your symbol of all that we can unite and get behind is clearly tainted. Now what? And maybe that's the question.
John Walker's got a lot of explaining to do.
Yeah. And I think you're right that we're gonna see a John Walker without a conscience off the deep end, looking like, I don't know if you've ever watched any of The Boys, but looking like a straight up Homelander type.
Homelander. Yep.
And it's like, ooh.
Yeah. Which they're filming season 3 now, and I'm stoked about that series coming out.
Nice. So I have Diane Amazon, and I love that for like series. Maybe 7 more days. So we dip in, same thing with like HBO Max. We dip in, watch some stuff, and then we're out, cuz it's like, yeah, we're not going to just keep giving you our money. Well, this was a great conversation, Eric. I'm so glad we finally launched our first episode here. Listeners, I hope you guys are enjoying listening in, getting to know us a little bit. I want to encourage you, go ahead and subscribe. Subscribe wherever you listen to podcasts. Make sure you hit us up on our website, gooddadbaddadpod.com. You can leave comments there or over on our Instagram at gooddadbaddadpod. We'd love to hear from you guys there. Leave a review on wherever you're listening to a podcast, especially if it's on iTunes. We would love to shout you out if you leave a review there. And hey, we will see you all back here in a couple of weeks on the Good Dad, Bad Dad podcast. Take care.